I think we are going to have a world very soon in India where it is not going to be left versus right. So all of you who are thinking left versus right is an obsolete framework. Because what you are going to be controlled by these algorithms, all of you, whether you are leftist, rightist is irrelevant. You're going to be controlled by the algorithm, and the algorithm is controlled by somebody sitting overseas. So this is a new form of colonization. I call it the return of the East India Company. I am making a provocative statement. I'm happy to discuss this during Q&A. I think the Constitution is a birth defect. India has a birth defect because some of the fundamental things in the Constitution, such as, you know, the judiciary keep appointing themselves like dictators, without the public having voted for them or appointed them in any way. There are some flaws like that. So this is with this, maybe I made more enemies, I don't know, but that's okay. That's part of life as an intellectual. You have to stimulate, and you are young people. You don't have to agree with me at all. You can disagree with me on everything you want, but we should be able to have a healthy dialogue. We should be able to respect each other's point of view.
Hari Om. Namaskar, everybody. I'd like to welcome all of you to this interaction with two intellectual giants, intellectual kshatriyas, and proud sons of Ma Bharati. Welcome to all of you. And I'd like to invite President of Pragna Bharati, Sirish Dobeshwarkarji, onto the dais. Sir, can you please welcome our guests? I'd like to invite the VC, Vice Chancellor of Hyderabad Central University, B.J. Rao Garu. I'd like to welcome Rajiv Malhotra ji onto the dais. Sir, can you please? I'd like to then invite Professor Vijaya Vishwanathan ji onto the dais. I'd like to invite Dr. Subramanya Swamiji onto the dais. A big round. Let us start today's session with lighting of the holy lamp. Godavari ji, can you please assist? I request the guests to please stand up to light the holy lamp. Deepa Prajwalana.
Sukham Kurutvam Kalyanam Arogyam Dhanasampadah. Sukham Kurutvam Kalyanam Arogyam Dhanasampadah. Shatrubuddhi Vinasaya Deepa Jyoti Namostute. Deepa Jyoti Namostute. Vande Mataram, Vande Mataram, Sujalam Suphalam, Malayaj Sitalam, Sasya Syamalam Mataram, Vande Mataram, Suprajyosna Pulakitayamini, Pullakusumita, Drumagala Sobhini, Suhasini, Sumadhurabhashini, Sukadamarada Mataru, Vande Mataru, Koti Koti Kanta, Kalakalaninadakarale, Koti Koti Bhujai, Drutakarakarvale, Abalakinoma, Aitabale, Bahubaladharini, Namami Tarini, Ripudalavarini, Mataru, Vande Mataru. Tumi Vidya, Tumi Dharma.
I request the President of Pragna Bharati, Sri Sirish Dobeshwarkarji, to please give us an introduction of Pragna Bharati.
Namaskar, good morning to all of you. I have great pleasure in welcoming for today's function Sri Raju Malhotra ji, Dr. Subramanyam Swami ji, Professor Vijaya Vishwanathan ji, and Professor B.J. Rao, Vice Chancellor of Hyderabad University. Today's subject is tectonic forces at play and challenges for a rising India. I also see the presence of many esteemed persons, eminent personalities. I welcome all of them, as well as all the students and faculty of HCU. To give a brief introduction about Pragya Bharati, we are a forum of nationalist thinkers and we follow a simple nation first policy. We are part of Pragya Pravaha, the nationalist movement across the country to create awareness about national issues and issues of national importance. Our main activity is to organize public meetings, conferences, debates on issues of national importance, and also to focus on the national ethos to find solution for them. Our second activity is to recognize eminent persons from our nation who have endeavored to contribute to the national causes, our efforts, as well as the projects. We recognize them every year, once a year, and those who are contributed and honor them with Pragya Puraskar. We honor them to redeem ourselves. Today's event, Tectonic Forces at Play and Challenges for a Rising India, is one of the most hotly debated and also the apt subject for today. These forces are operating not only from within India, but from outside India, and they are operating at different levels. And today's speaker, Sri Rajiv ji, Dr. Swami ji, Professor Vijaya ji, are here to explain the dimensions of these threats and also explain them, explain what we need to do individually and socially. I welcome you all once again and start the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Sirish ji. I take this opportunity to welcome all our other dignitaries and guests who are not on the dais. I'd like to wish you welcome now, Professor Jagdishwar Rao, Vice Chancellor of Hyderabad Central University.
Hari Om Tat Sat. Good morning to all of you. My special greetings and warm welcome to Dr. Subramanyam Swami Garu, Sri Rajiv Malhotra Garu, and Professor Vijaya Vishwanathan Garu to this wonderful university campus. University of Hyderabad is a multidisciplinary university, a jewel in the crown of the system here in India. We are an institution of eminence too. I also want to salute Pragya Bharati for bringing this gathering here in this hall at the university. Tectonic shifts, tectonic forces have always been there. They're being felt now and they need to be dealt with. This is a new realization. And universities are the places where ideas can be debated, new ones can be germinated, a lot of learning, unlearning, relearning can be done. In the years to come, my strong belief is that universities and academic institutions would play a pivotal role in India, because it is in Indian context, it is in Indian ethos that a new model has to emerge. A model where opposites can imbibe, opposites can coexist, and new solutions come up. Every developmental model we see has a built-in damage in it. It is India, perhaps, that can tame these damaging effects, can bring in some level of sanitation in the turbulent societies. We are now on the verge of getting ourselves completely immersed in technology, artificial intelligence, data world, etc., etc. But it is India that has to show the natural intelligence. Finally, we are rescued by natural intelligence. India is the only model that can actually give the deep natural intelligence to the system, to the world at large, that can combine the inner prajna with the outer technology. In no other culture and civilization, you can see these two opposites coming together. We have always been a fertile ground for opposites coming together and bringing up beautiful creation. I hope this deliberation today is a beginning of interesting journey of ideas where we take on the tectonic forces productively and profitably, not only for us, but for the globe. I wouldn't want to say too many more things. I'm here to hear my special invitees. And I again want to warmly welcome them and urge them, please come over here again and again. And let's germinate new things for the country and for the globe. Namaste.
Sri Rajiv Malhotra ji is a Silicon Valley entrepreneur, author of many books, Breaking India, Being Different, Indra's Net, The Battle for Sanskrit, and now The Snakes of the Ganga. He's founder of Infinity Foundation, chairman of the board of governors for Indic Studies, and an intellectual Kshatriya. Please welcome Sri Rajiv Malhotra ji.
Namaste. I'm delighted to be here and thank you so much for this invitation. And thank you to our panelists and Dr. Swami for coming. And I'm looking forward to a good discussion. The tectonic forces we discussed in an earlier book over a dozen years ago called Breaking India. And thanks to some of the individuals here, I want to acknowledge Arvind Rao ji, who really championed this, got a lot of people in the government and elsewhere to read it, and it created a revolution in the sense that many of the YouTube channels and thinkers and some government policies and all got shaken up. So a lot of that became common. A lot of the vocabulary, a lot of the metaphysics and the framework became common in India. But the world has changed. I find that Indian thinkers are still fighting for or against in terms of the old issues, and therefore this new book has come out to tell you about the new issues which I think Indians need to learn. So I'll give you a few surprises that should kind of jolt you, and then we'll have more discussion on it. So surprise number one is that United States has become the center of a new kind of Marxism. This is very strange because the last place you expect to be Marxist is United States, because it's the hub of capitalism. And so why is it that all these capitalists are also mixed up with some new kind of Marxism? And the reason is that what happened is that after World War II, some of the Marxists from Europe came to United States, Columbia and Berkeley in particular. And then they started, Marxism was about economic classes, haves and have-nots, economic means of production. Marx was very clear, it had nothing to do with race and it had nothing to do with religion. Marx was very clear, he did not want to create a clash between race or religion. He wanted to have a clash on economic haves and have-nots. But this new kind of Marxism applied in the United States said that race should be the basis for haves and have-nots. It should be blacks fighting whites. The same Marxist logic of thesis and antithesis, the same logic saying that we have to dismantle the grand narrative of the oppressor, the same logic saying that all the structures of the past have been created by these oppressors became applied to race in America. And that is fine because America has racism and they need help, and they wherever they can get the help from is fine. So this is a new kind of Americanization of Marxism. That was going to be this book I was writing about Breaking America, actually. The book I was writing first is called Breaking America, which was about this extreme left and extreme right, how they're fighting and so on. And then I realized that actually it's applying to India a lot. So I changed it to the current book. The second big surprise is the Indianization of racism. This is a very big thing. There is racism in America. We have casteism, but they are not the same thing. You cannot say that every disease is the same, because you have a disease, a virus, I have a virus, doesn't mean it's the same virus. Diseases are very different. So racism is, you know, people came from one continent, Africa, and other people came from another continent, Europe. They were brought as slaves. There's a whole history from the very beginning. We don't have something like that, that Dalits were brought from somewhere and Brahmins were brought from somewhere or whatever it is. We don't have that. We're all the same. We look the same. We speak the same language, have the same customs, food, whatever. So the disparities that exist, which need to be resolved, I am fully on board with that, are of a different kind. It is not sensible to bring American racism here and superimpose it on us. And we have a history of Varna Jati much more fluid. They've never had a history of fluid relations between blacks and whites. It's always been that way. So the ideas of racism from America to be blindly applied to India is a very serious problem. But what has happened is they have now got this Indianization of American racism. American racism says that the Dalits are the blacks of India and the non-Dalits are the whites of India. And the issue of caste is a racist kind of a syndrome. So the Indianization of racism. Now, what has happened, another surprise is that Harvard University is the center of all these studies. Now, that's very interesting. Harvard University itself, built by, by slave owners itself, having a quota for people who went to Harvard, their children have special quota. Those who are billionaires can give a certain amount of money and get their kids in. The center of power being asserted, it's the last place that would be that should be claiming that they are on high moral ground fighting elitism in other parts of the world. They themselves are the bastion of elitism in any place. So, but they've tried to now become successfully they've become the brand that is now fighting and exporting all this. So as a result of that, and their effect on World Economic Forum, their effect on think tanks in America, US policies, etc., the largest US export, ideological export to the world is now wokeism. Critical race theory, critical caste theory, all of that is being exported to all parts of the world. Now, everyone has social issues. China has its social issues. Russia has, India has, Pakistan has, every country has. And there has never been a society which is perfect. But we also have our own solutions and we have to deal with them ourselves rather than invite the Americans the way we invited the East India Company to solve our problems. We can't afford to do that because we know how it ended up when one Raja would go to the East India Company to solve the problem with the other Raja, and they would divide and rule and end up controlling both. So this is a danger we are currently facing. So another surprise is that this work at Harvard, which is a Breaking India 2.0, we call it, is being funded to some extent by Indian billionaires. Indian billionaires. So there is a Mahindra Humanities Center at Harvard. We have a full chapter on that. What are they doing? Why are they doing this? What's in it for them? The person who's the director is well known. A person who attacks India's democracy, India's whatever. And then there is the Mittal Center for South Asia Studies, same thing. They have all these India conferences. They don't invite a certain kind of people. They always invite certain kind of people. And then there is Piramal. There is Tata's is funding things. Bajaj is funding things in Harvard. So we are challenging these billionaires, Indian billionaires, to come out and discuss with us why they're doing it. What's the benefit? Is it a double face? Is it hypocrisy? Then in India, they're very patriotic. Outside, they are not. Or is there some strategy we need to understand? And So far, there has been no reaction. I was in Mumbai for 5 days and kept wanting to have meetings with these people, but they sort of very politely gave every kind of reason not to participate. So we will keep putting the public pressure. This, I think, requires enough intervention from our side. So this business of Indian-funded Harvard churning against India and its impact in India is a serious point. I mean, we have enough scholars of our own. We have a legal system. We have a democracy. And people are free to discuss. And I'm sure a lot of people here have different views. Why we need someone else to come in with a danda and monitor us and manage us is a very strange thing. The Vice Chancellor made a very interesting point that we are very unique, very in our own way, and how to work with opposites. India has been able to let the opposites coexist, which is why we have diversity. In other countries, one would dominate and topple and eradicate the other. We would have a genocide or a cultural genocide, and there would not be this diversity. The fact that old, identities still continue shows that there is a certain ability to coexist. Now, the Marxist dialectic is very different than our approach to opposites. Marxist dialectic says that one should destroy the other. It is no such thing as win-win. No such thing as we'll compromise and become both better, learn from each other. No such thing as respectful coexistence. It is, there is a thesis and there must be an antithesis. The two must clash until there is destruction, and then something new will emerge. So unless there is a destruction of the opposites fighting each other, there will not be further progress. If we felt that way, then we would have destroyed each other long ago. These different groups and communities and languages and faiths would have destroyed each other. Something new would have come, but that is not how we have done. Our approach to opposites is that the opposites coexist, learn from each other, and transcend the differences, and both get included in something higher. Your view, my view, both get included in something higher. So that's a different approach to managing, a different kind of alternative to the dialectic, which I think is very interesting, and we ought to think about that as a resource. Now, this book says that it shows in chapter 4 that one of the targets of this new Harvard-based, Breaking India force is an attack on IITs, particularly in technology, technical education, not just IIT, they're naming IITs. And this comes from a Harvard professor who's written this book saying that IITs are a bastion for elitism and Brahmin superiority to dominate and oppress Dalits and minorities and whatnot. But without giving any data, without giving any evidence, without giving any statistical facts, just sort of a few random, 5 or 6 random interviews here and there. So now, of course, there are such problems, but there are such problems in Harvard also. There are such problems in Harvard. You cannot say dismantle the whole place, which is what they're wanting. So there is also this jealousy that IITs are producing top people in US industry. 10, 20 years ago, Harvard was producing most of the CEOs in these industries. And now there's more IIT CEOs in America than Harvard CEOs in America. They must be feeling jealous. Who are these brown-skinned people taking our jobs? So there must be some issue that, these foreign people come and they take our best jobs. This must be also a factor that's worrying them. So this book talks about how in the United States, social sciences are meddling with hard sciences. This is a very interesting thing. Normally, hard sciences are, discovering new facts and new things about nature and the discoveries for its own sake. And then the application is different issue. But the discovery of fundamental truths in science and in nature is for its own sake. But now social sciences are making policies for the hard sciences. This is a very new thing that, major scientific journals have social scientists deciding whether it is socially a desirable thing to publish this paper. Nothing to do with whether it is true, but whether it is politically correct, socially correct. And if it is not, then it should be cancelled, no matter how valid the discovery. But it has to be useful. In other words, the politicization of science is something which is happening. And some of the best scientific centers in the United States, they are losing their brains, the best brains, because they want to go somewhere else where they do not have the same biases against the natural sciences. So all of this is going on. Now, as far as India is concerned, the billionaires have funded this. That's one issue. But the billionaires are bringing into corporate India a lot of these policies that have been coming out from the US into the HR departments. And it's American consultants, you know, these people like McKinsey and Deloitte and Ernst & Young and Pricewaterhouse and whatnot, all of these guys, they are the ones who are advising and measuring and monitoring what's happening in the Indian industry to tell them what is right, what is wrong in terms of social justice, in terms of so on. As if Indians don't have their own idea of social justice. This is very strange that we need Americans to tell us about social justice. We need Americans to tell us about diversity as if we don't know about diversity. And the sad thing is that even Niti Aayog has got these kind of consultants. And the large part of the policies being made in India are being made by American, American advisors. So, for instance, when you look at the NEP 2020, it has many good things regarding STEM education. Many good things, you know, science, technology, engineering, medicine, these kind of things, a lot of good things. But then when it comes to liberal arts, the liberal arts is all made in Harvard. This is the Harvard liberal arts, Harvard kind of humanities. It's not Indian, with the Indian ethos and Indian values. The liberal arts is the big invasion from places like Harvard into India through the NEP. So now NEP is promoting these things, but not having invested in developing the Indian solutions. So if there are no Indian curriculum, textbooks, teachers to teach an Indian approach to social sciences, then when you open the floodgates and create these positions, obviously the foreign people come in and take those positions. So the future generations of India are going to be trained in even more than currently in the Western social sciences. Even today, all the social sciences taught in India, or at least 90%, is based on Western thought, as if we never had social sciences. Now, China does not have the same inferiority complex. China does not have the same colonization. China has an ancient tradition of their own thought, political, social, economic thought, and they're teaching that. And they're building a nation based on their own ideas rather than becoming dependent on the Americans. They're very clear on that. Japan has its own thought. Russia has its own thought. The Middle East Arab countries have their own thought. They're not trying to become a copycat of the Americans. But India, it's very fashionable to look for legitimacy from the Western world in order to, especially in the social sciences. So these are some of the big forces at work that we are tackling. Now this battle, there's a book we came out with called The Battle for IITs. It's available out there. It's a small book you can read. And this book is, the surprising thing is that we are non-IITians raising this issue and defending the IITs, but the IITians themselves never did it. I mean, these books have been out against the IIT system for several years. Papers were published by Harvard type people against the IITs for several years, almost going back a decade. These things started. IITians sleeping. When we all these years, and I would bring it to somebody's attention, they would say, "Oh, we don't want to talk about it. You know, theek hai, aap kar lijiye, you do it. We don't want to talk about it." This business of being very risk averse, not sticking their neck out, not wanting to get into controversy. Even now, when I go to IIT Bombay, after they had promised that they want to have a discussion and whatnot, at the last minute, the faculty said, no, I don't know if I want to say it on camera, you say it. Each of the faculty telling some student, aap jaake bol dijiye, or they're asking me, what should I say? I said, what do you mean, what should you say? Your institution has been attacked. Your young students, when they go somewhere, they are being called racists. what you have to say is you have to decide. What do you want to say? I can't coach you. You are professors here. So I was very surprised at the fear and incompetence, I would say, to be able to give a response, intelligent response, a thoughtful response. So these are some of the problems we consider, coming in the way of India being a Vishwaguru. I mean, I think India is aspiring to be a Vishwaguru. That's fine. India should become one. That's fine. But India has to earn it. India doesn't. There's no way you can say India is a Vishwaguru. Maybe India was, and India should be in the future. But right now we are more like a Vishwachela. We are Vishwachela because even the narratives about us, history about us, philosophy of us, political thought, social thought about us is driven by somebody else. The best journals, the best places people go for to get their PhDs, the best conferences are held overseas on India. Our people go there to publish a paper to become recognized on a subject which is about India. So this foreign control of our narrative is a very big thing. And our government has done nothing about it. The Culture Ministry, HRD Ministry, External Affairs Ministry have really failed to do anything about it. They're giving lip service, we are Vishwaguru, but it's not a slogan. You have to be, Vishwaguru means that at least at first you take control of your own narrative, that everybody else should follow our narrative about who we are. And then you can talk about other things. So this gap between wishful thinking and reality is an issue that is of concern to us. Now, the problem of foreign universities controlling our narrative got worse with the NEP bringing that narrative into India in liberal arts. And now it's about to get even worse with the UGC announcing that they want to bring foreign universities to set up campuses in India. So this is quite strange. It would be fine if they said campuses for STEM education because they have advanced technology and we should learn from it. But no restriction on what they can teach. And so all the folks that are fighting for the last so many decades are going to come and teach here, with no restrictions. This is quite a letdown, I would say. And if the policy says that they can teach anything they want, which, by the way, Indian universities are not allowed to do. Your university has to get clearance for a course. But now the foreign campus can come and not need clearance. Also, it says there's no restriction on who you can hire to be a professor. So all these horrible people can become professors. And whereas your university has to, the Indian universities have some standards on who you can hire. No restriction on what salaries you can pay these professors that foreign universities are set up. Total exemption. But here we have standards of salary. No restrictions on how much tuition they can charge. But here you have rules. So you are going to not, instead of creating a level playing field, you are going to create a field, a new kind of education where being a foreign university has an advantage, a competitive advantage over the Indian university. So you're going to decimate and finish off our ecosystem of higher education. Like importing all kind of manufactured goods from China, finished off our manufacturing industry. Now we're trying to bring it back. So we're going to do the same destruction, self-destruction of higher education in India by just constantly bringing in foreign universities. And you students, when you graduate from this university, you will find when you're applying for jobs in a few years, you'll be competing against somebody who's got in Hyderabad a degree from some Western university, and they'll have more clout, more brand value, you see. So all you are investing in our system, and then the other system comes. So we're in a sense, we are colonizing. We are really working hard to get colonized again. This seems like a pretty lousy policy that for some reason, I don't see enough debates going on over here. Now, besides the role of liberal arts and social sciences, whether it's attacking IITs, whether it's infiltrating Niti Aayog, whether it's making policies on education, besides that, there is another kind of a foreign invasion which is a huge threat to us. And that is the data privacy, the theft of data, the data mining that foreign organizations are doing in India. Harvard is a very big data mining operation in India, and they are working with Ashoka University. The French government has a project with Ashoka University to do data mining in India, political data mining in India. Then there are projects in the south with foreign entities involved, where they are data mining about villages and what is going on, what are the social issues, building all kind of databases on Indians, which can be used to train algorithms, train AI algorithms, and also bias the social media, and also it can be used to create divisiveness, change election outcomes, change, convert people. Imagine if social media makes all its money, not by charging you anything, it's free, but makes all its money by because the brands, the corporate brands that are sponsoring them, are able to sell clothes or airline tickets or holidays or bank accounts or property. All kind of people who sponsor are doing it only because it works. It works better than other media. So the advertising is going towards social media because it's able to convince people based on their algorithms, how they do it. Therefore, they can also convert your religion. They can convert your political thought. They can convince you to vote this way, that way. They can send fake news to trouble you. They can suppress your news and say, we are not going to accept your news, cancel you. And some other news they can put in there and promote it. All of these platforms are controlled from outside India. Our billionaires didn't invest in creating our platforms, but they invested money to places like Harvard to study us instead of doing the other way around. So lack of Indian platforms in social media and the control by the foreign entities of our entire social media, combined with the data mining that's going on a very large scale, is a very dangerous thing. This is happening with the corporate sector, the Googles of the world, the Googles and the Amazons and all these companies doing it. Facebook, they're doing this data mining and building their algorithms, learning how to manage us better, how to manage the Indian mind in a more sophisticated way. So that's a serious issue. So where does all this take us? This is a conclusion I want to leave with you. I think we are going to have a world very soon in India where it is not going to be left versus right. So all of you who are thinking left versus right is an obsolete framework, because what you are going to be controlled by these algorithms, all of you, whether you are leftist, rightist is irrelevant. You're going to be controlled by the algorithm, and the algorithm is controlled by somebody sitting overseas. So this is a new form of colonization. I called it the return of the East India Company. In a book on artificial intelligence, I called it the return of the East India Company, where knowledge about you, your weaknesses, your emotional, psychological profile, how to manipulate you, how to make you fight this person or that person, one Indian against another, one community against another, left against right, whatever, left against left, right against right, all of that. This kind of psychological, political, social manipulation from overseas is the new frontier. And this is the new social structure being created. And so all you guys who think your enemy is some right wing, left wing, or versus whatever, I think you have forgotten the big battle. The bigger battle is not that. That's the old battle. You have to understand the big game. This is a big game, and it's already happening. It's not something that will happen in 20, 30 years. I'm predicting in the next 4, 5, 6 years, you will see clear evidence of foreign meddling in the Indian society. And it is not that they're all going to align with this guy or that guy. They'll just have more gather, more fighting, because that is good for them. And you will see a sort of recolonization threat, certainly a possibility. Now, against all this, we have to create our own awareness. Firstly, we have to control our grand narrative ourselves. and put our grand narrative into the algorithms rather than Wikipedia and other people's narrative about us. We have to, that's one thing we have to do. We have to take control of our own liberal arts and social sciences ourselves. So, you know, we have a lot of people who are social media influencers, a lot of people who are becoming important in giving talks and manthans and whatnot. 8 years have gone by. Why hasn't there been serious work to create a kind of an Indian constitution? Our own Dharma Shastra for modern Bharat. We don't have a blueprint. We don't have a draft. The current constitution is a 1935 British document with, 5, 10, 20% adaptations and changes. The most of it is a British document about ruling India that we have copied. And some of the fundamental principles are not found in the traditional Indian texts. So we have to question whether we have some kind of a birth defect. I think the constitution is, I am making a provocative statement. I'm happy to discuss this during Q&A. I think the constitution is a birth defect. India has a birth defect because some of the fundamental things in the constitution, such as, you know, the judiciary keep appointing themselves like dictators without the public having voted for them or appointed them in any way. There are some flaws like that. So we need to correct that in order to forestall this onslaught from overseas, this new Breaking India forces, Indians need to rise and become more Swadeshi, more Swaraj, more Swadeshi in our own social thought. So this is with this, maybe I made more enemies, I don't know, but that's okay. That's part of life as an intellectual. You have to stimulate, and you are young people. You don't have to agree with me at all. You can disagree with me on everything you want. But we should be able to have a healthy dialogue. We should be able to respect each other's point of view, you know. And so I don't want you to start off by taking anything I'm saying as a given, but you should think about it. And you should keep personalities and personal attacks out of the way. That is bad for good intellectual development. You should take the points I'm making, do some investigation. I've given a lot of evidence. Vijay and I have worked very hard. In our book, we've given a lot of evidence. Last 300 pages is end notes and bibliography and whatnot. So it's full of evidence to prove our case. And we invite you to read all this and get back to us, and we'll have debates. I'm willing to come back and have good arguments. You can bring experts from the other side and we can have a good debate, but it should to be respectful. Thank you very much, all of you.
Thank you very much, Malhotra ji. That was a very, very lucid talk on a very, very scary subject. I hope we are all able to take away the key points from this about the new coming of the East India Company.